Custom Car Care.
Good morning and welcome. You got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Hopefully everybody is loving the weather outside.
Yeah, it's really feeling like spring out there.
You know, bring it on.
I'm okay with it.
I won't say the older I get because I complain about that a lot, and I'm not all that old, to be honest. But this cold this year really, like, I was just not feeling it at all.
You felt it in your joints, huh?
I did. It was like, man, this stinks. I'm not a fan. So if we can keep it in the 50s and 60s, oh yeah. But we still got a wee bit of winter ahead of us.
I know. But the good thing is I'm looking ahead at the forecast, and it looks like we're going to see kind of the lower 50s. And then by the end of the week, it's going to be upper 60s.
I love hearing that. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. I hope everybody out there is either enjoying it or getting some of those projects done, because this is a what I would consider a rare glimpse of spring a little bit early. And I'm hoping that it stays that way. Now, you know, law of averages here in Missouri is that, you know, it'll snow in, you know, June or something crazy like that. But I'll take it while we can get it so far. I have had a tremendous amount of calls, family, friends, customers, clients, whatever, you know, just folks in my world looking to buy used cars.
Oh, yeah.
I have had a drove of them, and we've been successful with several folks trying to find used, good quality used cars. Now, I did want to share with you, Sarah, and everybody out there in the radio world, that I did a lot of pre-purchase inspections the last few weeks for like some smaller car lots. And I'm not picking on smaller car lots. I'm talking about like the probably maybe $3,000 to $7,000 vehicles, you know, things people can buy outright. And I'll be real honest with y'all. I was very disappointed in the cars that I saw come through. They had done some work to them, you know, they kind of do a reconditioning process with a lot of used car lots, or, you know, they try and buy good or better vehicles. But when you're talking about that budget, which especially going into tax time, you know, every dollar needs to go as far as possible. And in today's economic world, and you can fill in the reason of why that is with the old inflation, I haven't complained about that in a little bit, but the dollar doesn't go quite as far as it once did. So whether it's parts or purchasing the vehicle or labor or whatever it is, you when you're in that kind of price point for cars, you're going to have to basically do more legwork, if you will, in my opinion, to make sure that you get the very best deal possible. And what I mean by that is if, you know, say your budget's maybe $3,000 to $7,000, say, you need to make sure that on the front side of that purchase, you are really doing your homework, kind of beating the bushes, if you will, to make sure that you don't buy an absolute money pit. I don't know any of you out there have ever owned a boat. I'm going to tell myself a little bit. But I bought a boat in my younger days, and I'm not going to say that I won't have another one at some point. But the old joke that a boat is a hole in the water to throw money is pretty accurate, honestly. Now, I love boats. I'm not picking on them. But they're not a budget-minded sport, if you will. And I love being out on the water. So you got to pay to play. My whole kind of parody there, if you will, is that if you do a bad job or you buy a vehicle emotionally without doing your homework, you have just bought yourself a hole to throw money in, and you're going to have a ton of money tied up in it, and hopefully it's drivable, okay? So I'm going to tell you about a couple of them that I did pre-purchase inspections on the last few weeks. One of them was, I think, $5,500. It was a little Toyota, and it had transmission problems. So you buy a Toyota, think it's a great rig, and I'm a big Toyota fan, but this one wasn't the rig. So we sent it back to the dealer, which was good. So we avoided the commitment of financial and emotional tax, I guess, and we sent it back to the car lot. Now, hopefully somebody else did their due diligence, but in the me being a realist, if you will, I guarantee somebody else has already bought that car, and they're probably having problems with it by now. The very next one I looked at, I believe was a Hyundai Acura, something like that. And they had done quite a bit of work. Car drove decently. But before I even got back from my test drive, I could smell a significant amount of oil burning somewhere. So we get it up on the rack within a very short amount of time. You know, I can see that they have replaced a lot of parts, but the amount of leakage and front end components, and very quickly I could see that, you know, maybe this car is $5,500. You're going to have to put another $5,500 in it to make it a drivable, reasonable car. Really, in order to buy that car, you'd have had to buy it for about $1,500 and then put the rest of the budget in the car, reconditioning or rehabbing the vehicle. And so I'm sharing all that with you because the car prices are coming down. I'm seeing better deals out there. I'm seeing where, you know, the inventory on these car lots are filling up. Now, with that being said, some of these larger car lots that stayed somewhat moderately full of inventory through the COVID years, they overpaid for a lot of that inventory. And they're trying to liquidate it off and not lose any more money than, you know, they have to in order to move that inventory. So you're going to have to hustle out there is my whole point of this opening segment of Sarah and I's show. And I realize I've kind of run off at the mouth here for a little bit, but I'm getting the phone calls. People are coming in for the pre-purchase inspections. And whether you come to A1 Custom or somebody else that you trust, just go and get them done. If you got a family member that is capable of doing this and doing it well, maybe I want to talk to him because maybe I got work for him. But you need to do your homework. If not, you are going to be severely disappointed. And I don't like that. I love the car business. I'm in the car game. If I move to Europe someday for whatever reason, which is not going to happen, I would be in the car business over in Europe. So Asia, fill in the blank with wherever. Mars, maybe I'm working on Teslas and Mars someday. Who knows? Life is funny. But I want you guys to have good vehicles. So the moral of this story, we ended up finding a good, small, compact or midsize SUV, private party sale. We kind of kept with the process, going through the pre-purchase inspection, found a smoking deal on a beautiful little vehicle, and I believe this is going to be a good long-term vehicle for a first driver. I think it'll be safe. I think it'll be dependable. It's very stylish. Honestly, it's nicer than maybe every car that I've ever had, but it's a very nice little SUV. So there is a silver lining, but if you get frustrated and then you just basically throw up your hands and buy something. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that over the years, and it panned out very poorly, whether it was rusted out, had crazy fuel leaks, needed $15,000 worth of work. I mean, people get taken quite often, and you know what I'm trying to do as far as my part of, you know, going through these pre-purchase inspections is to not get them into a lemon. And anybody that's had like significant car problems understands that it is a real pain in the rear. And I don't want you to have to go through that. Life's difficult enough. Let's avoid that. Now, do I have a crystal ball and can look inside these vehicles? No. I mean, I wish I could tell you that it was a magic eight ball and, you know, I know everything that's going on. But there's a tremendous amount of information that can be had. A, even if the car needs work. Okay, so let's pretend just for a minute here. The car needs a significant amount of work, but you still like the car, okay? Very often, what happens is you go back and you present the pre-purchase inspection or you know talk to the owner that's wanting to sell the vehicle and say, hey, this thing needs a significant amount of love, care, whatever, fill in the adjective there that you want. A lot of times, a good seller is going to say, well, let's negotiate here. You know, I bought one here a while back that needed a lot of love. We ended up coming down about $400 in price because it was different than what they had kind of perceived online and then over the phone when I had visited with them. So you really got to do your homework. One of the really kind of, I don't want to say tricks of the trade because this is kind of an obvious clue, if you will, is if it is here in Missouri, which we have a state inspection program, I'm always real critical of the tags, whether how long the tags have been expired, you know, so that gives me an idea of how long the vehicle's been sitting. And then secondly, in the driver's lower left corner of the windshield, there is a state inspection decal that says what month and what year it had been inspected. So that's not a foolproof thing. Those are just clues and indicators that I've found to be very handy over the years. But Sarah and I need to step in the break. Looks like we got some current automotive events we're going to talk about right after the break.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, you got some stories
and literature. I have got all kinds of news for you today. First and foremost, we're going to be talking about EVs, but just for a little bit here. Because Ford, they are cutting the F-150 Lightning production, and 1,400 jobs are going to be affected by this.
I hate hearing that.
But there is some good news with that.
Okay, good, good.
So they said that, you know, they're going to cut the production of the F-150 Lightning because the demand for the electric pickup is waning, of course. They said that they're going to reduce the number of shifts at the Rogue Electric Vehicle Center. That's where they, of course, build the EV pickups. This is going to start at the beginning of April.
Okay.
Now, they say that the move, it's going to affect about 1,400 workers. 700 of those workers are going to be moved to the company's Michigan assembly plant, and then some employees will be placed in roles at the Rogue Complex or other Ford facilities in Southeast Michigan, and others are going to be able to take advantage of the special retirement incentive program agreed to in the 2023 Ford UAW contract. Now, one thing that is mentioned about this is Ford said they are going to be moving nimbly across its global footprint to capitalize on its balanced lineup and serve customers with the right mix of gas-powered hybrid and electric vehicles while optimizing financial returns. So basically, you know,
it was bad for business.
Exactly. And they're going to be increasing the production of their gas-powered vehicles. But then this is what cracks me up. So that was the official Ford statement.
Okay.
And then they also stated a little bit later, they are going to start using a 1,600-person third crew, for Broncos, Bronco Raptor SUVs, the Ranger, and Ranger Raptor pickup production. So there you go.
I like the sound of all that. Ford, you have Sarah and Dustin's approval on this business this business change. That just makes sense. I mean, I think you and I have been talking about this for, I don't know, quite a while, that the EV deal, you know, with essentially, and I don't mean to be just the guy blaming the government for everything, but they're trying to ramrod it down everybody's throat, and it just ain't working.
Exactly. So I really did like Ford's little kind of fluffy answer there. You know, we're just trying to make sure that we're here for everybody.
Yeah.
But basically, they're like, hey, look, we got to ramp up production
for other things.
They did also announce that they are going to be launching a new Ranger and a Ranger Raptor.
You know, I actually hadn't heard, I don't think, of the Ranger Raptor yet, so that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, I'm gonna actually have to look that up. I have a feeling I've seen the photos of it, but
you know, when you look at the popularity of those Broncos, the Ranger, the Maverick, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of them around Springfield here, and they're very, I don't want to say functional,
I've seen these before. Yeah, they're good looking trucks.
They really are.
Yeah,
that's a beast.
I'll post a photo in our show notes so you can
I think we need like three or four of those. What do you think?
Yeah, they're good-looking trucks.
Oh, they're jumping it even. Well, I guess that's the point of a Raptor, right, is to be able to jump it. Those trucks, you know, when I think of a Ranger, though, and I look at that photo, that's such a bigger truck than the traditional, I guess, the OG Ranger that everybody loves. I know it always cracks me up when the meme, and I can't sing it here on the radio, but there's quite a love for the old Rangers out there, if you will. And rightfully so. I had a dear friend, Sarah, I might have told you this story, and I know story time with Dustin sometimes, but he had a, I'm going to say it's probably like a 95 Ranger, somewhere around there. And we had, you know, it's his, but we were so bad to that Ranger, like beat on it. At one point in time, the bed got wrecked, and so he drove it forever with no bed on it, and it would do a crazy burnout with no bed on it. We put different engines in that, so we pulled the four-cylinder out at one point and put a 351 Windsor in it, V8. It was insane. Then he decided that, I'm going to go back to the four-cylinder, so he put a four-cylinder back in it. That truck took a beating and just really never let us down. I can remember one time with it, I had an 83 F-150, I think. It had broke down. I know, shocker on all that. And I was going to my vocational school in Monette, and we towed that thing with his Ranger all the way to Monette with a tandem axle, two-axle trailer. And, I mean, that Ranger, you couldn't do that with a late model anything, I think, of that size. So hats off to the old Ranger lovers out there. If you got one, take good care of it, because they are well worth, you know, what they are. Would you ever buy a Bronco? Could you see yourself rolling in a Bronco?
I love Broncos, but I don't love some of the issues that they have faced here in the last couple of years or so. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of waiting for them to hammer out some of those issues before I would ever be interested in actually purchasing one. But I do really like the size of them. Mm-hmm. I think that that would make a good little family vehicle. Yeah. Plus, it's, you know, it's a Bronco.
So have you ever had or knew somebody that had either a Bronco that you could take the doors and top off of, Jeep that you could take the doors, or the old, the full-size Bronco or K5 Blazer? I'm sure there's some other ones in there that I'm forgetting, maybe the Scout. Have you ever been able to run around in a SUV trail riding?
Yes.
Is that not the coolest thing ever?
It is. I almost died one time doing that.
This is a death story? We need to hear the death story. What happened?
Well, I don't want to throw him under the bus, but Billy.
Oh.
Billy, Ryan's best friend, Billy. We were doing some just driving through the woods, trail riding, and it was dark. Oh. And he about ran us up the side of a tree.
Billy.
And then we went sideways. And of course, it was on my side.
Oh,
and
no.
Like, we were like stuck there. And he ended up finally getting us out. But we were covered in mud. And I was like this the entire time, just holding on to my seatbelt. And I thought, I'm never riding with him again. Oh. And I didn't.
Well, you should give him a second chance. Billy will do better the next time. I'm confident in that. When I was younger, I've had a lot of Jeeps over the years. I've had several old K5 Blazers. I don't know that I've ever had any old Broncos, actually, now that I think about it. I need to put that on my list.
Yeah, if you get tired of it, you can sell it to me.
You know, that's a good possibility. I had a guy yesterday come into one of the shops, and he had the old, like, 77-ish Bronco. Mm-hmm. And it was fully restored.
Nice.
We've scheduled it to do a custom exhaust job for him. He, you know, basically, he's driving a pretty good ways to come see us. But he's like, I can't find anybody that will build me a system. Like, I got you. I'm that guy. And, you know, he was really happy. He's like, man, I'm not saying money's no object, but just finding somebody that can do that to the level. And I'm like, yeah, that's where we come from. A1 Custom is initially a custom exhaust shop from way back. So I didn't ever want to lose those skills. And I spent a long time learning those skills to be able to build a beautiful one-off custom system. And I've done a lot of those Broncos over the years. So when that comes in, I think it's in the next couple of weeks, he's trying to get it running. He's been restoring it for 10 years. And by the time they come see it for exhaust, they're almost done. So I will definitely send you some pictures, because I think this is a beautiful, beautiful Bronco. But, you know, if you're going to drive something, we need commuter vehicles, don't get me wrong. But why not have some style? Maybe I'm being a little bit nostalgic. But back in the day, you know, look at the cars out of the 60s and 70s. Those cars had style. And I miss that a lot. And I'm sure I'm not the only one out there. If you guys have a favorite vehicle, I would love for you to text it in or message into the show here and let us know what it is. What's the most stylish vehicle you ever owned or wanted to own? I talked to one of my techs yesterday. Sarah, do you know what a Buick Grand National was?
I don't think so.
So back in the day, they are amazing cars. They're very sought after, very, I think, underappreciated would be a good way to go about it. But he had one that he bought when he was 15, I think. And his folks got upset and made him return it, basically, is what happened. And when he's telling me the story, like, you know, the lone single tear that just rolls down your face, it was, I mean, not quite that, but I was pretty close to that. But anyway, Buick Grand National for 2 years, and I'm sure there's some experts out there that, you know, will, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe for the 2 years that those were produced, they were faster than the production Corvettes of the year. They were a V6 car, if I remember right, but they were turbocharged. And oh my goodness, did those cars run very well. As well as, you know, for a lot of years, they were overlooked and people really didn't know much about them. But now there's kind of a cult following, and they're kind of rare too. So if you have one or ever had one, that's, you know, I've got a great buddy of mine, and that's been his dream car forever. And he's really the reason that I kind of even am aware of these cars. And so as I think about, you know, what a cool car, and I've owned a lot of, maybe not a lot of cars. I've owned some cars over the years, but a lot of, you know, four-wheel drive trucks, SUVs. And I have a great appreciation, or maybe I'm getting, you know, more nostalgic as I get a little older, of, you know, what the craftsmanship it truly was. I mean, they weren't plastic, they weren't spacey looking or, you know, bubbly looking for aerodynamics. They were the least aerodynamic vehicles they could produce, honestly. I mean, you look at the square body Dodge and Chevys out there. I mean, they were basically a box running down the road. But I love those vehicles. I truly do. And everybody knows I kind of fling some poo at Dodge once in a while, but the old first-gen Dodge that they produced, you gotta love them. I mean, talk about utilitarian, like make you think about what you were doing in the, you know, 95 or whatever, what was going on in your life, that was the newest, latest, and greatest vehicles out there. And then, you know, driving them, they didn't have all the creature comforts and bells and whistles, and the cabs weren't that quiet, and road noise, and all, you know, they didn't start all the time, but they were cool. They were that second kind of cool. And, you know, I've had a ton of square body Chevys. I sold them for cheap and nothing, you know, when I was younger. And now, I mean, you look at one that's just a rolling chassis. The darn thing brings $5,000 and doesn't even run, doesn't have a motor. But if you got a cool something or other out there, hit us up and let us know. But we're down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to 104.1 KSGF. We'll be right back after the break.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back, Sarah and Dustin. A1 Custom Car Care. You got some, you think this will raise anybody's blood pressure
possibly
for these here stories? What
possibly
do you got?
Possibly. Well, I've got a bunch of stories about the left over here when it comes to automotive.
Big
the automotive
watching
industry is, it's not doing great in California. Car and Driver, they have a story that California bill calls for tech to make new cars unable to speed.
Oof.
Yes, so here we go. Someday in the not too distant future, it might no longer be possible to drive a brand new car faster than 80 miles per hour in California. And that's because State Senator Scott Wiener earlier this week proposed a new bill that aims to prevent certain new vehicles from going more than 10 miles over the speed limit. Now in California, the maximum posted speed limit is 70 miles per hour, meaning anything north of 80 would be off limit. Now, the Speeding and Fatality Emergency Reduction on California Streets, or Safer California Streets for short, is a package of bills that includes Senate Bill 961. Now, that was published on Tuesday, and it would essentially call for speed governors on new cars and trucks built or sold in California, starting with the 2027 model year. Now, these vehicles would be required to have an intelligent speed limiter system that electronically prevents the driver from speeding above the aforementioned threshold. The speed limiter tech wouldn't apply to emergency vehicles. That's also language in the bill that the passive device would have the ability to be temporarily disabled by the driver. However, it's unclear in what situations that might apply. The bill also states that automakers would be able to disable the speed limiter fully, but presumably only for authorized emergency vehicles. The commissioner of the California Highway Patrol could authorize disabling the speed limiter to at their discretion. I don't think it's at all an overreach. I don't think most people would view it as an overreach. We have speed limits. I think most people support speed limits because people know that speed kills, Wiener said, according to an ABC7 News in California. The proposed legislation is said to be an attempt to address rising traffic fatalities, which in California, they have reported an increase by 22% from 2019 to 2022. What do you think about this?
So if Scott had a family member that something had happened to, and Scott needed to get to the hospital, do you think he would drive the speed limit?
Probably not.
Hmm. The other part of this is when you look at government vehicles, a lot of the government vehicles don't come with the emissions regulations that all of us peasants, if you will, have to foot the bill and pay for.
What's that saying? Rules for me, but not for thee?
That's very powerful, Sarah. That's exactly, I guess, the point there. It's like, really, you guys work for us. And I don't mean that to be like, you know, viva revolution, nothing like that. I just mean like, if we got to play by the rules, they should have to play by the rules. And if they're not playing by the rules, then we should not have to play by rules they come up with. Because you know they're cramming all this stuff down our throats, but they themselves are willy-nilly and doing ungodly item things. I mean, we can get into a whole nother tangent there, but let's just keep it to automotive, I guess. Is that, you know, if you're going to come up with these regulations, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's like, you know, don't follow the rules. I try and do the speed limit, but anybody that knows me knows that I've gotten many high-speed driving awards by my local law enforcement agents, which I dearly love y'all. I appreciate all that you guys do, and I try and make it very easy when I get pulled over speeding, and I haven't done that in quite a while, knock on wood. But this just seems crazy to me. This is like, and I'm going to open a big can of worms here, but this is like gun control crap. I spent a fair amount of my childhood living east of the Chicagoland area. And anybody knows that, you know, Chicagoland area is a free gun zone. Well, that doesn't work. They keep pushing all this legislation or these rules that only law-abiding citizens follow. So the scumbags out there don't follow these rules, but yet they keep writing more rules and more BS that the good, you know, stand-up people that are carrying this country on their back pay for. So you buy you a, I don't know, I looked at, I didn't look at it, it was on the internet the other day, but the new like high-end AT4 Duramax Chevy platform or GMC platform, as well as their, I think it's the Denali Altman or whatever the highest trim package. That thing was $107,000 for a truck. And now I realize I always bring everything back to a truck. It could be a car. It could be an $80,000 car. Whatever. Fill in your whatever. But if I spend that kind of money and I need it to get up and go for a good reason, not just because I want to be a dirtbag. There's dirtbags out there and they're going to find a way to do dirtbag stuff. But if I've got a loved one that something's happened to, I'm going to push the envelope. And I don't think, to Scott there, that anybody else out there isn't going to do the same thing. And I bet you he would as well. He may fire up his private jet, and I bet that goes faster than 80 miles an hour. And I'm being a little dramatic here.
And another question about this, and I didn't see the answer to it in this story, is what about, say you live in California, or say this vehicle was purchased in California, made in California, whatever, and it has this technology to where you can't go above 80 miles per hour. I looked it up. There are tons of roads in the United States with speed limits of 80 miles an hour. So you're telling me that if you went to Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Texas, Utah, Wyoming, you would not actually be able to go the speed limit on some of their highways. In fact, you would be going under the speed limit by 10 miles per hour. Wouldn't that cause traffic issues? Wouldn't that be a danger to that driver?
You know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. Everybody knows that I tow quite a bit. But you get somebody out there, you know, that is driving significantly under the speed limit, and you're towing a, you know, moderate to heavy amount of weight. That is as much of a risk to other motorist as it is for anybody that's driving 120 down those roads. Now, I'm not condoning that, but I love going to Oklahoma because I can make good time in Oklahoma. There's not a lot of what I would say, you know, and I realize things happen out there on the highways and byways, but there's not a lot of risks. I mean, they're pretty flat. They're pretty visible, if you will. I mean, you can see for miles and miles and miles. And as long as everybody keeps doing what they're supposed to, they're not texting or watching movies or whatever people are doing other than driving. I mean, that's a pretty safe system out there. I mean, I don't understand why they think they can legislate themselves or us into, you know, basically being the kid that's in a bubble and doesn't it get exposed to the world. I don't get it. How about we teach people more and more valuable skills? You know, we haven't beat the band on skills in a while, and I realize I'm making a little bit of a parody, but just kind of bear with me just a second as I birdwalk around here. The more we dumb down the world, the dumber the world becomes, okay? So, you know, I'm going to go back to, I don't know if any of you remember the Tide Pod Challenge that was out there a few years ago. I mean, I think that screams the fact that, hey, how about we not eat the laundry soap? You know, why do you have to put a label on there that says, hey, don't eat poisonous stuff that's not food? Just saying. Give that a thought. We're going to step into another break. Sarah and I will wrap this up right after this.
Your complete car care solution, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back, Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. I'm trying to think of what the theme of the show today, but it's kind of like watching out for everybody's money.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
You've got a story over there that I think really speaks to that. And it's really kind of sad. And if there's any insurance agents out there, I would love to get your take on it. But why is it that they creep up the prices and then the only way to get a better deal is to leave that insurance company altogether?
I don't know.
It just baffles me.
The good news about this, I'm trying to be positive today.
I know.
Because I feel like we've just been negative. The good thing is, so the story is car insurance prices are on the rise, mm-hmm. and these are the states with the highest premiums. So that's the article title. Good thing is, Missouri is not on this list. But if you plan on moving, or maybe you have friends and family in this area, it's a good idea to be aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah.
New Yorkers, this doesn't surprise me, they pay the highest car insurance premiums in the country. They also have the most hoops that they have to jump through whenever they are purchasing a vehicle, whenever they are going through inspections, and just different things when it comes to emissions.
Have you ever seen like a 10-year-old New York car?
Mm-mm.
They are Swiss cheese. Can you imagine buying a new or new to you car, and in 10 years it being completely rusted away and gone.
That's just depressing.
Mm-hmm.
So the yearly premium for full coverage car insurance in New York, it averages $3,374.
My goodness.
So that is according to Insurify. Now, this company, they found that it to be the case for the Empire State and its residents as part of a report released earlier this month that identified the 10 states with the costliest premiums. Mm. It tied New York's car insurance cost to its dense population and its supplemental spouse liability insurance law. Now, I don't know a lot about that law.
Yeah, what is a supplemental spouse liability law?
And of course, I got this story from Fox Business, and they don't go into it, so I'll look it up. I'll post it in our show notes for us. So, okay, these are the states with the biggest average yearly full coverage car insurance premium. So, of course, we mentioned New York. The next is Nevada, $2,974. Florida, $2,917. Delaware, $2,806. Louisiana, which is kind of surprising, $2,792.
That does surprise me.
Washington, D.C., $2,756. South Carolina, $2,680. Maryland, $2,645. Michigan, $2,640. And Rhode Island, $2,452. Now, Louisiana, the number five spot holder, saw its drivers put more of their income toward car insurance than any other state, according to Insurify. The company pegged the share of income paid to car insurance at 4.7% in the state. Hmm. The states with the priciest auto insurance come as premiums for full coverage climbed over $386 on average last year to hit about $2,019. In the year before that, they hovered around $1,633. The price of car insurance will go up by 7% this year.
My goodness.
That is the estimate from Insurify. And of course, they cite some cost stabilization.
You know, I'm seeing it. It costs more to do repairs. I mean, we're not in the collision business, but, you know, sometimes there are situations where we're dealing with an insurance company. I know of one right now, but a very nice lady ended up sliding into a curb, affected some significant suspension damage, and that cost of that estimate was, you know, higher than what it used to be.
Right.
So I think the moral of our story here is, you know, we all need to be paying attention to our dollars. You know, I'm not talking about tripping over dollars to pick up dimes here. This is pretty significant.
Yeah, 7%.
Yeah.
Is on the estimate.
On top of the already going up pricing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. We all got to have insurance and all that jazz. But holy smokes. I mean, I feel like this is another tax on us to where we're just being taxed to death, and this is obviously, I'm stretching a little bit there. This isn't necessarily a tax, but this is another fixed cost, no different than taxes, that we are just paying and paying and paying and paying and paying. And here in Missouri, we got to pay property tax. Mm-hmm. So you got a car, you pay the insurance, you pay the property tax, you pay the sales tax when you buy it. I'm like, come on, guys. You keep coming back to this well, and eventually it's going to be dry.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a quitter by no means, but, you know, at some point, why is all the hard work worth it? You know, and I don't see myself ever not working. I mean, I actually really enjoy working, whether it's, you know, on cars or with the livestock or whatever it is we're doing. It just drives me crazy that it just continues to be fee and subscription and, I mean, taxes. It's just like, come on.
I understand that.
What's left?
I understand it. Side story here.
Okay.
Just something that crawled under my skin.
Yeah.
So I am a very strong believer of, if you take out a loan,
mm-hmm,
and you are very aware of what you're doing and you have, mm-hmm, a conversation about it and you still make that choice to take out,
yeah,
that loan, you should pay it back.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about student loans here.
I knew
and
where you were going.
Whenever they were on pause. They were on pause for about 2 or 3 years. I kept paying them because there was no interest on it. And
oh,
I thought, let's try to knock it down as much as we can. That way, whenever they do, you know, actually come back and the interest starts rising, I will have paid off a significant amount,
yeah,
of that. So anyways, read a study that like 26 to 36% of people who have student loans are not paying them back, mm-hmm, at all.
Yeah.
They're not paying them back. Well, I have been, and I paid it on a Saturday, my last one.
Oh, and congratulations.
They told me, no.
Oh, no.
No, my last one that I made,
I still owe like
$20,000.
Okay.
But the last payment I made was on a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
They told me, hey, because this is on a Saturday, even though this is the due date, we're not going to be able to process this. And then on Monday, it's a holiday. So technically, it's going to come out on Tuesday, and we're going to charge you a late fee of $30.
What?
And I said, no, you're not. And they said, well, yeah, we are. And I said, you're lucky you're getting money.
Yeah.
You know, I am one of those people that I pay my bills.
Yeah.
And I'm like, same thought process,
mm-hmm,
as you. You know, I'll never not pay my bills,
right,
because they're my bills. But I'm like, it's so infuriating seeing all these people who aren't paying it. And then the people who are on the correct dates are getting punished.
My goodness.
I
don't even know what to say to that, Sarah. I went from being happy that I thought you were paid off to
I have paid some of them off because there's different loans.
Oh, there
and
is.
Then they lump it all together.
Oh, okay.
So I have like $20,000, but I've paid almost like eight. 5,000 on it. So
well done, Sarah.
I've closed a couple of them already.
You know, thankfully, you know, I didn't have to go through that, but I commend you for A, sticking to it and getting your degree as well.
Thank you.
Well done. I can remember, I believe, when you were going through that. And the fact that you're, you know, you're paying for that, that's a big deal. As well as you're working in the field that you went to school for.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of folks out there making payments that are not employed in the field they went to school for.
Exactly. And there's a lot of useless degrees out there. And I feel like they just kind of push you to, you know, just do something.
Yeah.
And oftentimes these people that are going through college, they don't think about the repercussions mm-hmm. until they're actually in the work field. And
yeah.
they're like, you know, I've got a degree in general studies
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't really do a lot.
Yeah. You know, I'll take somebody that's got experience, you know, in the industry. Not saying that I don't appreciate college. I do. And, you know, at some point, maybe I'll go to college. Maybe I'll be that, like, 60-year-old man going to college. And something I wish I would have done, you know, hindsight being 2020. I was a middle-of-the-road student, I guess, except when it came for, obviously, automotive. I just didn't see why I would use a lot of that stuff. And surprisingly, I use a tremendous amount of the studies that, you know, I went through just with regular high school and then vocational school. But my point is I goofed off in Spanish class. And so Mrs. Dooland, I don't know, you're probably not out there anymore, but she was my Spanish teacher. And I did pass, but I can think of one word that I can say in Spanish, and it's not a bad word.
No,
it's a rock concert. Do you know how to say rock concert? El concierto de rock.
I like that.
So that was what I learned, or I retained, I guess, after a year of Spanish. Point is that's the one, and maybe not the one thing, but the biggest thing that I wish I would have committed to a little bit more is a second language. And so if I ever get the chance to go back and study it, it doesn't got to be Spanish, but that's the one I think I would use the most. And I would like to have a second language at some point. So maybe I'll be the weird old guy going back to college just to keep learning. I don't want to ever stop learning. I don't think the car industry is ever going to let me do that, but I love learning new skills and having those skills. So like, even if I go somewhere and I don't have tools and equipment, I carry those skills with me that I can be resourceful. And in today's day and age, that's becoming a very rare thing for people to be resourceful, that I carry those forever. So to my point, if I ever move to Europe, which I'm not doing, I use that as an extreme example, I will have that skill set even in Europe. Now, it may be different. You know, we may not have the imperial system and I'll have to embrace the metric system or whatever the case may be. But my point of this whole deal is be a lifelong learner. I don't ever want to get to the point where I'm just sitting in my recliner, I'm watching Wheel of Fortune, and I'm, you know, not progressing in life. Even when I'm 80, I want to still be doing some cool stuff, you know? You work your whole life away to get to retirement, and then you just kind of waste away. I hope when I'm 80, I'm parasailing, or I don't know what I'm doing, you know, having a good old time, able to drive a car that'll go faster than the speed limit. I don't know. I'm grasping
faster than 80 in
yeah,
California.
Right. That's not happening. Not happening. I wish, and unfortunately, we need to pay attention to what goes on the coasts. My dad always said this when I was a kid, because a lot of what we get later initiated on East or West Coast. And so Sarah and I talk a lot about stuff, you know, in California and New York, et cetera. It's not because, you know, we're in love with California and New York. It's because we need to pay attention to what's coming down the pipe to the heartland of the United States of America. And unfortunately, a lot of that garbage ends up migrating our way.
Well, believe it or not, we are officially out of show. If you're out there in radio land, you got a question or a comment, feel free to text us. That text line is 417-447-5743. Once again, that is 417-447-5743. Or you can reach out to us on our social media at 1041KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Be safe out there.
Bye.